The Fleischmann's Deep Tower, directed by Rudy Valley. And Company. Tonight's cast, in order of appearance,
Bill Corum, sports editor of the New York Evening Journal,
who brings us the latest authentic dope on the Smelling Lewis affair, postponed by rain until tomorrow night.
Cornelia Otis Skinner,
who makes one of her extremely rare appearances in a vehicle other than her own character monologue. She'll be heard in a scene from John Van Zouten's romantic play, There's Always Juliet. Vincent Prince, who will act as Miss Skinner's leading man tonight. His sensational success with Helen Hayes and Victoria Regina was one of the season's notable theatrical events. Midge Williams, who comes from Harlem by way of Tokyo and Los Angeles to sing Dinah for us in, believe it or not, Japanese. Joe Cook, who has Graham chuckling already. Complete company then.
Bill Corum.
Cornelia Otis Skinner. Vincent Price.
Midge Williams. Joe Cook.
I should pray for you, I yearn.
Jim has postponed the big brawl between Lewis and Snelling until tomorrow. But the question of the day remains. Can Dermoxie withstand young Black Joe's dynamite? Or will the brown bomber take the German the way he took Bear and a score of other leather pushers, great and small? We go to authority for an answer to Bill Corum, sports columnist in the New York Evening Journal, a widely syndicated fellow who knows his stuff and how to write it. For the most recent word in Joe and Mox, we give you Bill Corum. Bill, let's get right down to this burning question. Who's going to win tomorrow? Rudy, my friend, do you honestly mean you don't know the answer?
Mm-hmm.
I see. All right, let me phrase the question another way. How long do you think Mox can last? As a so-called expert, Rudy, give me the privilege of so-called expert. Let me stall a bit. I have brought with me tonight two gentlemen who have first-hand knowledge of both fighters. Or perhaps I should say first-fifth knowledge. I'd like to introduce these two boys to your audience. One of Joe Lewis' sparring partners and one of Max Smaling's spar mates. Two boys who can take it, who have taken it, and who deserve a great big hand for what they took. Exhibit A, Frank Wotansky, 204 pounds. Training camp pal of the Brown Bomber, Frank Wotansky.
Hi, Mom.
Like all box fighters, Frankie loves his mother dearly. And now, Exhibit B, Mickey McAvoy, 188 pounds. Sparring partner of Max Smaling, Mickey McAvoy. Mr. McAvoy also loves his mom. Mr. Wotansky.
Yeah.
You've been boxing with Joe Lewis during the past 2 or 3 weeks in training camp.
Yeah.
He's pretty good, you'd say.
Yeah.
He can hit.
Ooh.
I get it.
I got it.
And boy, you can have it. It seems, ladies and gentlemen, that Lewis can hit.
Hey.
What is it, Mr. McAvoy?
Look, if that guy Lewis can hit so good, why is it this palooka still has his front teeth? Who you calling a palooka, you palooka? You, that's who. Listen, palooka, I can take you like Max is going to take Lewis.
Says who?
Says me.
Is that so?
You want to make something of it?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Gentlemen, calm yourselves, please. Mr. McAvoy, what would you say is Max Smaling's best hand, his right?
Yeah, it's terrific.
His left isn't so good. He just paws around with it, hoping to make an opening for a short right. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It'll be miter, that's what it'll be. Miter. Go and miter him.
Says who?
Says me. You want to make something out of it?
Go ahead. Start something. Go ahead. Start punching.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Just a minute there, gentlemen. Listen, if you boys want to fight, just step out there in the dressing room. Right over there, Graham. You take charge of these gentlemen and see that the rules of fair play are observed.
Certainly, Rudy. Right this way, man.
Okay. 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 Come on along.
Well, Bill, how about the other fight? Well, here's my guess, Rudy. Joe Lewis will knock out Max Smaling in the third round, give or take one or two. I mean to say that off their records, you can't logically expect Smaling to go more than about three rounds. He's really 9 years older than Lewis. As McAvoy told you, he has only one good hand. He's trained diligently, but he hasn't been active in the ring. And it's fighting that makes fighters. Both Smaling and Lewis have fought Paulino Lustadon, the old bass woodchopper. Indeed, Smaling fought him 4 times, if my memory serves, and had plenty of trouble with old Upside Down every time he met him. But Joe Lewis knocked Paulino out with the first hard punch he landed. Knocked him out and out of the ring forever. As Ezzy wrote a friend here in America not long ago, I quit fighting when they started using knives. I suppose Ezzy never will believe that somebody didn't throw a bomb at him. So terrific and so lethal was Lewis' smash. It drove Paulino's glittering gold teeth right through his upper lip and smashed his face so badly that it looked for a moment as though it would fall completely apart. 45 minutes later, coming out of a cold needle shower,
Paulino all but toppled over, and would have if his trainer hadn't caught him in his arms. And the senor upside down, Rudy, was a mighty tough old hombre. So that while I like Smaling personally, he's pleasant and educated and a well-mannered young man, I don't see how he possibly can win tomorrow night except by one of those miracles that sometimes happen in sports. They all go when they're hit right and hit hard, and Lewis will be no exception, if Max can nail him. The German lad is also a strong finisher, and the further it goes, the better chance he will have. Lewis's great sport is that he punches so fast. He doesn't, as a rule, topple him with one blow, but when he puts three of those dynamite charges together, then look out. But of course, we'll have to wait until tomorrow night to see how it really comes out. Thank you for the opportunity of joining you on your program this evening, Rudy, and keep your fingers crossed for me through that third round.
Just a minute, Bill. Let's find out how your sparring partner friends made out. Oh, Graham.
Yes, Rudy.
Who won?
The fight was canceled. You see, when they got outside...
Yes, yes, what happened?
They found out they were both Harvard men.
Diminutive bit of dynamite and personality, Judy Sowery. Comedian has dust moth hair. You probably can guess all three of them. What most people would consider handicaps, these three funny men have turned into valuable personal trademarks. But there's one handicap to a good appearance that's always a liability. Graham McNamee will tell you what to do about it.
Rudy is certainly right. A broken out complexion is always a liability. Skin eruptions offset your good points and undermine your self-confidence. They keep you from being aggressive in your work. And they keep you at home many evenings when you'd like to be out having a good time. And the worst of it is, skin blemishes usually come at the worst time, between the ages of 13 and 25, just when you're trying to get started in the business and social world. During these years, when you're completing your growth, your skin is changing. It becomes extra sensitive, and when irritating poisons get into your blood, it breaks out with those ugly eruptions. A treatment that has proved very successful in clearing up skin troubles has been the regular eating of Fleischmann's yeast. This tonic food acts to purify the blood, cleanse the system of skin irritants, and then, in a large percentage of cases, the eruptions go away and the skin becomes smooth and clear. If you're embarrassed by skin troubles, lose no time. Add Fleischmann's yeast to your diet. Eat one cake a half hour before each meal.
¶¶
fading fever, not a sign of fever, but who wants fever? Margaret Sullivan of the movies, who had hoped to be with us tonight, has been prevented from appearing by a sudden illness. At a late hour yesterday, Cornelia Otis Skinner, a very good friend of ours, consented to take Miss Sullivan's place in the sketch we had prepared from John Van Druten's romantic play, There's Always Juliet. Only once before has Miss Skinner appeared in any other role save the one she creates for herself, her famous character monologue. I think perhaps a good many of you will recall that single occasion, her performance here with her eminent father, Otis Skinner, 2 years ago. Tonight, as Cornelia Otis Skinner's leading man, we present a new figure of major importance in the Broadway theater, Mr. Vincent Price, who nightly plays Prince Albert to the superb Victoria of Helen Hayes. We have seized upon Mr. Price at the final moment. Day after tomorrow, he makes the inevitable pilgrimage of New York success to Hollywood. A lovely lady of great charm, Cornelia Otis Skinner, and a handsome young man of great promise, Vincent Price, in a romantic love scene from There's Always Juliet. Our play is about Leonora Pericott, an English girl, and Dwight Houston, an American, who fell very much in love at first sight. They have returned to Leonora's apartment after a day together, their first day in each other's company. Considerable progress has been made. In fact, they already know each other so well, they call each other Steve, a circumstance that might prove confusing if we hadn't told you about it ahead of time. Scene, the living room of Leonora's London flat. Steve and Steve enter. Turn up the light. And Steve says,
"Let's stay here and talk."
All right. What should we talk about?
Us.
Have you anything to say?
Not. I'm crazy about you, Steve.
No, no. Don't kiss me.
Why not?
Oh, don't go on, please, or I shall cry.
Steve, would you consider marrying me right now?
Of course not.
What do you have to have, an act of parliament?
No.
I'm sailing in the morning, you know.
Yes, I know.
Would you come after me and marry me?
Oh, I couldn't. It would be crazy. Oh, I want to. This minute, terribly. Just so as not to lose you. But I've got some sense.
What's sense got to do with it?
Everything. Oh, Steve, please look at it sensibly. I've only known you for 24 hours.
Did you sleep last night?
Not a great deal.
Well, there you are.
Yes, but Steve, we can't get married like this. I don't know a thing about you except that you're fun and that I like you.
I should have thought those were reasons enough.
Oh, no, be sensible.
How can I? Tell you I'm crazy about you, Steve.
If we could get married tonight, I'd be tempted to, I know.
But the qualms I'd have striding up to the whatever it was we got married at. And imagine the journey on the boat if we sailed together. Married. And the engine thudding. It's for life. It's for life. It's for life.
Not in America.
But suppose I said I'd come off to and marry you. Just imagine the scene with Mother and Father. Mother, I've got something to tell you. Yes, dear, what is it? I'm going to be married. Oh, really, dear, to whom? Dwight Houston. And who might Dwight Houston be? That's Father. He's an American. An American? And how long have you known him? Oh, about 24 hours. I can't even imagine his reply to that.
Oh, Steve, dear, even if you won't promise to marry me, come to America. Come see how you like me with my own background. Give me a chance. Get to know me. Bring a chaperone. Bring two. Bring 20. But say you'll come.
Oh, I don't know. I can't see.
Well, then come. What is it you want to know about me?
Well, where do you live? How do you live? I don't know.
I have an apartment on Park Avenue.
Are you well off? I'm only trying to be practical. I'm sure it's the first question Father would ask.
I can support you.
Have you a family?
I have a mother, and I have a son.
A son?
Yes.
I told you I didn't know anything about you.
I was married nearly 7 years ago.
I see. You haven't a wife by any chance, have you?
Not anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. She's not dead, and she's married again.
You're divorced, then. Where is your son?
With mother.
How old is he?
6.
What's he called?
Jonathan.
Jonathan? Nice.
Kind of nice.
Tell me about your wife. Why did you break?
I think she found she didn't like me very much.
And you?
I think I did once. Do you mind?
Of course not. How strange.
What?
All of this. I told you I didn't know you.
It makes a difference?
A little.
How? Oh.
It makes it all more grown up.
You think I ought to have told you before, Steve?
No.
I do. I've been wanting to all day.
Oh.
Only I didn't want it to get that serious.
Well, let's not let the fun go out of it.
Then you agree it makes it serious. Oh, Dwight, I do love you. There. I've called you Dwight. That shows how serious I am.
Darling, I love you so much.
Oh, me too.
Then won't you marry me?
Oh, I can't. Not like this. It's not enough.
What's not enough?
Love. This kind of love. I said I loved you. I don't think that's true. I'm in love with you. That's what's not enough. Being in love is no guarantee for happiness. In marriage, anyway, is it?
Well, you can find out. Won't you try? Come on over. Come to America. See how you like the way I live. Won't you, Steve?
No, I don't trust all this. It's never happened to me before. I don't believe in it. It's happened all too quickly. Besides, it wouldn't be the least good me trying to get to know you. So long as I'm in love with you, I haven't the chance to know whether I like you or not. And I do love you, Dwight. That's why I don't trust any of it. It's all too swift and hectic. I might come over and find you a most awful blackguard, but I'd still be in love with you. We've begun this at the wrong end, my dear.
I see. Well, what do we do about it?
I can't imagine.
All right.
You know I'm right.
I guess so. What was that tune, the one they played so much tonight?
Steve.
Honey, don't. Don't, please.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to be such a fool.
Oh, it's all right.
Oh, Steve, forgive me. I hate people who make scenes. There. There, it's better. Now we'll just go on as though this hadn't happened. What do you want to do?
I want to make love to you. Darling.
Oh, darling. Oh, dear.
I know. It's stupid, isn't it?
Horribly.
I love you, do you hear? And don't you dare forget it.
I won't.
Will you write to me?
Mm-hmm.
All the time?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me everything you do?
Everything.
Never forget me?
Never.
I'll be back next year.
Next year? 12 months. 52 weeks. 365 days.
You're funny, Steve. So so close, so far away. I love you. I love your eyes, your funny little cat eyes that go up at the corners.
They don't.
Oh, don't argue. I say they do, and your nose and your ears.
You've never even seen them.
Never mind. I love them all the same. I love all of you.
You are a new experience to me, Steve.
I believe I am.
What is it about you?
It's me personality.
Oh, Steve. Oh, I'm going to hate tomorrow.
Beloved, so am I.
Yes, but you've got your home and your boy. I shan't have anything but the memory of you. And I suppose this is the end. The real end.
I'm coming back.
Next year. What's the good of that? You can't heat up a souffle.
Change your mind, Steve.
Oh, don't let's begin again.
Oh, what then?
Well, I suppose we've got to say goodbye.
No.
I should think we might as well. Isn't going to get any easier. I'd rather get it over.
Okay. Goodbye then, Steve. Good luck to you.
No. I can't. I can't. Hello, operator. Operator. Dorchester, 7362. Please hurry. Hello? Hello, Mother? Mother, is that you? Well, listen. I'm going to be married. No, darling, not buried. Married. Married. Steve. Steve.
Peggy Sullivan, if she's listening, our sincerest wishes for a speedy recovery. And to Miss Skinner and Mr. Price, our thanks for a fine performance. In the language of our friends earlier in the program, that was okay. The Fleischman G-Star continues with the Whippin' Poof song. Poor little lambs who have lost our way.
don't believe I ever realized the extent to which American customs and manners and entertainment have permeated the entire civilized world until I met up with Midge Williams, our next artist. The movies, of course, have carried Americanisms to every nook and cranny of the giddy globe. But performers get around in person, too, it seems, from Panama City to Harbin in Manchuria. The language of jazz music is a common tongue, spread through the world by adventurous people of the theater who take an audience and a weekly pay envelope where they can find it. Midge Williams is a Negro girl from San Francisco, originally, who has traveled all over the world with a song on her lips. Her records in Oriental tongues are best sellers in the Far East. Hollywood knows her well, too, and so does Lenox Avenue. Her first song tonight, The Lament of Exiled Negro Artists Everywhere, and a serenade for Joe Louis on the eve of battle. I've got Harlem on my mind. Presenting Midge Williams.
Emeralds in my bracelet, diamonds in my ring, a Riviera chateau and a lot of other things. Lots of ready money in 7 different banks. I counted up this morning, it's about 1,000,000 francs. And I'm blue, so blue, and I know why. I got Harlem on my mind.
Midge Williams' most recent engagement overseas was at the Cafe Florida in Tokyo, Japan. The Florida is what would be called a taxi dance hall in New York or Chicago. Dancing partners are available to gentlemen patrons at a standard fee. But according to Midge, and her description is checked by several much traveled friends of mine, the establishment is conducted on a plane of almost unbelievable decorum. A favorite among the international clientele of the Florida and Tokyo, Midge Williams' version of Dinah in Japanese.
Oh, Dinah, food of Washinokimi, cup of Kurobarano, Anatoki Soite, of Siaka. Oh, Dinah, you money,
Personally, I find our weekly talk by Dr. Ari Lee most interesting and uniquely valuable. Tonight, Dr. Lee discusses a topic that keeps recurring. Should we cut out candy and sweets or not? Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. There is a widespread notion that people suffering from skin trouble should stop eating sugar, candy, and other sweets. This is a mistaken idea for two reasons. First, cutting out sweets does not clear up skin blemishes, as many young people have found out. Second, the body should not be entirely deprived of sugar. A certain amount is desirable and should be included in the average diet. Of course, an excess of sweet things is bad for you, just like an excess of anything else. If you are troubled with skin blemishes, avoid rich, spicy, fatty dishes. Eat a wide variety of simple, wholesome foods, including plenty of fruits and vegetables. Let me also suggest that you add Fleischmann's yeast to your diet, one cake half an hour before each meal. This tonic food has a purifying action. It rids the system of poisons and cleanses the blood of those harmful products that irritate the changing, extra-sensitive skin of young people, causing it to break out. If I had a son or a daughter bothered with skin eruptions, I would have him or her follow this simple diet treatment. It is the best way I know for clearing the skin of these blemishes that trouble so many of our young people. Thank you.
His retreat in Lake Hopatcong, New Jersey, where his collection of objects no bigger than a man's hand bewilders all visitors, where on a private golf course you can't help making a hole in one, where Schultz competes with Kelly to serve you beer and pretzels, in the wilds of Hopatcong emerges Joe Cook.
Okay. Why, Graham, I certainly am surprised to see you here tonight.
Surprised? Why, Joe, you knew I'd be here.
Yes, but my little boy, Englewood, poked the rake in my eye this afternoon, and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to see you tonight.
That's too bad, Joe. How did it happen?
Englewood, you mean?
No, the accident, Joe.
We were out in the backyard removing the seaweed from my glass-bottom boat that I invented.
A glass-bottom boat? What's the idea? So people look down to see the fish.
No, Graham. My idea was to fix it so the fish could look up and see the people. But it worked both ways. It turned out that the people were more anxious to see the fish than the fish were to see the people. In fact, I have noticed that while people will stare at fish for hours, a fish is satisfied with one peek at a human being.
So, Joe, did you make any money on your invention?
Not from the fish, but I made a lot from the people. Now I'm extending the idea.
How's that, Joe?
I'm working on a glass-bottom taxi cab. You can sit in the cab and get a nice view of the people the driver runs across. Be sure to bring your candid camera.
You wouldn't think of a thing like that.
Yeah, and I've already interested the subway people in glass-bottom subway cars. Then everybody can look right down through the bottom of the car.
But there's nothing to see under a subway car, Joe.
Yeah, I know, but it's better than trying to read a newspaper over the other guy's shoulder. And I'm also working on a transparent saddle horse.
A transparent saddle horse? Why?
So you can look down and see how far you're off the ground before you fall.
No, I don't believe a word of what you say.
Well, Graham, I'm sort of losing faith in what I say myself.
Say, Joe, how did you get the tan this early in the season? Not riding around on your glass-bottomed horse.
No. I've been living out on a golf course in a sand trap. Why, I thought you knew.
No, Joe, you're not really living in a sand trap, are you?
Yeah, of course I am. It seemed that every golf ball I hit landed in a sand trap, and I was spending so much time in them that I figured I might as well live in one. Yeah. And now I wouldn't live anyplace else unless at the bottom of a lake
you
on a water hole.
You couldn't live at the bottom of a lake.
Is that so? I claim the best place for most golfers is at the bottom of the lake.
Well, how do you find living in a sand trap, Joe?
Oh, just as comfortable as home. I've got it all fitted up with nice furniture, tapestries, lace curtains, and everything.
Oh, you can't hang lace curtains in a sand trap, Joe.
The kind of sand traps I get into, you can hang the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. I've got it all furnished with the rocking chairs, floor lamps, and I've even got an ice box.
To give the other golfers who drop in a cool reception, huh?
No, Graham. I did it for the wife and caddy. And do people drop in while you meet more prominent people in sand traps? Where at home, it was just one creditor after another. In a sand trap, it's the case of a lawyer after a doctor after a politician after... Well, a politician is after anything he can get, these days. Why, last week, it looked like the Republican convention.
But do they stay long, Joe?
Stay long? Why, there's one fellow who got in that trap last April, and we can't get him out. He can't get himself out, and he's tried every club in the bay.
Why doesn't he take up polo?
Well, setting him on a horse isn't going to help his aim any. Well, anyhow, he's promised to share the expenses.
What?
Oh, you know, the overhead on a sand trap is heavy on account of all the visitors. And it cost me a lot of money to provide the wife and kiddies with earmuffs.
Earmuffs, Joe?
Sure, I don't want them to hear the language that goes on in a sand trap.
How did you break the news to your wife about moving?
Well, after my third day in the trap, I figured it would take me years to get out. So I phoned my wife and I said, Annie, I'm thinking of making our permanent residence here. I want you to come down and take a peek. And she says, who is this calling, please? And I says, Joe, your husband, remember? And she says, well, vaguely. And I says, well, that's all right. Come on down anyway. So she says, okay, where is it? And I said, it's that nice, big, deep sand trap about 50 yards to the left of the first tee with a lot of elephant footprints in it.
What'd she say to that, Joe?
She said, well, what'll I bring? And I said, oh, just bring my nightshirt, a folding bed, a gas stove.
Oh, now, look here, Joe. You can't get gas for a gas stove on a golf course.
Graham, you've never heard those golfers when they talk about their scores. Well, the next day, we moved in the rest of the furnishings, like the Turkish rugs and piano.
Turkish rugs and a piano and a sand trap?
Oh, I know they're illegal under the golf rules, but I never use the rugs or piano in getting the ball out of the trap. I just stick to my bag of 50 clubs. Say, come over tomorrow. We're having spinach.
Spinach in a sand trap?
Well, there's no better place for spinach than sand. I didn't have to tell that one, Graham. I'll tell it anyway. The sand we get there is wonderful.
Have you got anything to wash the spinach down with, Joe?
Oh, shame on you, Graham. You know my rule about taking a drink. I never take a drink.
What?
Well, unless. Unless I happen to see an object that corresponds with a drink.
What do you mean? How do you mean?
Well, for instance, if I see a wedding, I drink orange blossoms. Girls with rosy cheeks, pink ladies. If I find a dollar, buck beer. One day I took my wife for a motorcycle ride, so I had a sidecar. We passed Benny Dictine's pawn shop, and I ordered 3 highballs. Then a Scotch bartender offered me a new cocktail, but I said, no, I'm old-fashioned. I'll take a martini, but the man hadn't any.
Uh-oh.
Just then, a strange cat walked in and it nearly had me stumped. I didn't know whether to order a Tom Collins or a Pussy Cafe. So I drank them both, made a wry face, and cried out in pain. But my wife said, let him whine. That's only champagne. She knew nothing ailed me. Then we got pinched for speeding, and the sergeant said, pay a fine or take a cell, sir. Instead, I gave him a Flanders punch, so he hit me on the cream de coco with a club soda, and did I drink 3-star brandy.
Thank you. it's a fact. Every frog, every grass does a song.
When you're from,
it's a thrill, it's a treat. Put your heart in your feet when you fall. It's USA, native, culturally native. Throughout the land, they do that dance. It's democratic. Penthouse and attic are hand in hand, finding romance, doing a prom. At Cornell, you will see Notre Dame, Tennessee. It struck the campus just like a bomb.
Now America, now the country, Vienna, doing the prom.
I've seen a goodly number of young couples out dining and dancing. By rough calculation, during the last 10 years, I've probably directed the dance music for over 1 million young people out on dates. My observation forces me to agree with what Graham McNamee is going to tell you now. It's just this. Skin troubles and dates seldom go together. The young people you see out dining and dancing are mostly the ones who have smooth, clear complexions. When your skin is broken out, you can't help feeling like an ugly duckling that nobody wants around. Your own mirror tells you what you look like. You really don't blame other people for not rushing you more than they do. Of course, there are plenty of others in the same fix. Between the ages of 13 and 25, most young people have trouble with their skin. During these years, when you're growing up, the structure of your skin is changing. And while it's changing, your skin is very sensitive. Then when irritating poisons get into your blood, it gets upset and it breaks out. By clearing irritating poisons out of your blood, you can help matters a great deal. And a good way to purify the blood is to eat Fleischmann's yeast. Eating this fresh yeast regularly helps rid the blood of skin irritants. Then your skin looks much better, and in many cases clears up entirely. Many thousands of young people have gotten clear, attractive complexions by eating Fleischmann's yeast. Begin tomorrow to let this tonic food help you, too. Preparing to assemble next week in Dallas, Texas, for the annual convention of the National Retail Grocers Association, our greetings. Next Thursday, another variety show of four-star caliber. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Heard on the flight from G-Tower, there's a small hotel, come on your toes. I've got Harlem on my mind from a thousand cheers. And would you, from San Francisco. This is the National Broadcasting Company. Thank you.